the Doctor.
It's clobbering time.
Endgame.
Welcome, inmates, to Heroes Asylum issue 59. Almost at the 60 mark. I can't wait. We are Heroes Asylum. We are a weekly podcast where we talk about everything in the geek universe. And I can't do this alone. I have my trusty companion, Thanatos Kane. Government name used.
That's right. No real names in this podcast. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. Good to see you too. Yeah, good. I had a long weekend. I was at PodFest this weekend. For anybody that wants to know what PodFest is, it's a gathering of all the podcasters. Not all the podcasters, there's more than that. But we had a good turnout, about 2,000, 3,000 podcasters there, and the makers and breakers in certain industry, part of the industry. And we all just got together, passed out cards, talked, you know, compared ideas, and looked at some new cool gear coming down the pike. And so that's what I've been doing. So if I'm a little sluggish on this episode, guys, I do completely apologize. I had 2 days out there, 1 day to prep for this. So hopefully I will keep up with Kane, because I kind of threw this one on Kane last week. So hopefully he's going to run somewhat most of it. So
we'll be fine.
Yeah, we'll be just fine. But what we're going to do, we're going to jump into the admissions ward. This is where we talk about all the news, the goings-on, some rumors, some speculations, you know, who got caught with who. No, not that. We're not that.
Maybe Pike if we get desperate.
Maybe if we get bad enough. Maybe we'll go back to we got this covered. But, you know.
Ooh, ouch.
I came across an old one of their posts not that long ago, like old. And it was connected to a meme I think I sent out there, and it was a Captain America. So it's posting like, oh, so you.
I saw that was so good.
I came across.
I had a chuckle for a couple of days. I'm like, what is he doing?
So, all right, guys. So we're going to hop into the admissions ward. And like I said, just our weekly news.
News from the admissions ward.
All right, Kane, you take it away.
Well, we only have a couple of news stories this week. One of them was a confirmation, or not confirmation, but if you're an actor on set with somebody who you're going to work with for probably 3 to 4 months, I would say it's pretty much a confirmation. Christian Bale, that's right. Christian Bale of the Dark Knight trilogy of Christopher Nolan is going to be playing a villain in the Thor Love and Thunder movie, which is coming out in 2021, I believe, next November. Look out for that. So this is confirmation that it's something we reported about a couple weeks ago that he was or may or may not be in there, but this is kind of like a heads up. He's definitely going to be in it. And I think this is a great casting. He's probably one of the best actors that we have going on right now. I mean, you know, the affinity I have for him for a lot of the movies that he's done in the past, especially the Dark Knight trilogy, American Psycho, The Machinist, which is a really deep movie. The Prestige was another movie. And recently Ford versus Ferrari, which is shamelessly nobody actually saw. You saw, and I thought he was great in it as well. But and the immortal words of an old friend of mine, it's always good when you add talent, and he's definitely a talent to add to this film.
Yeah, I always love to watch him, especially like you were saying, the Ford versus Ferrari movie. That was really good. I didn't know what to expect out of it, and I'm a big Shelby fan, so watching that was really cool to see them. I know you and I sort of talked about it, but like I don't think there's any ideas yet of like what's going on. We know it's Thor. We know it's Jane Foster. She's going to take over the mantle of Thor. So everybody out there who freaked out going, oh my God, she's going to be Thor. It's the mantle of Thor. She's not going to be Thor. You know, Thor is still there. You know, most likely, if anything, maybe if this ties into the Guardians of the Galaxy, he turns over and says, hey, I'm going to give you responsibility. I got to go off and do this thing with these guys. Maybe something along those lines. But again, I'm a Thor fan, and I have my areas, and it's not that I'm anti-feminist, folks. So don't even think this, but I didn't get into those with Jane Foster as Thor. I didn't like him. I think my biggest turn off was she talked like Thor. It's still Jane Foster. Talk like Jane Foster. Don't walk around doing thous and these, and it just threw me off. So I couldn't.
It only works for a certain, like only works for him. And if you do it, yeah, that's, I agree with you, because that's, he's been doing that for God knows like 50 ever. Years. That's and all the Asgardians have been doing that in the comic book, like the thou to these. My older brother Alvin, who got me into comics, he could never get into those comics because he could never read the Shakespearean thing. But my older brother's also an idiot, so he doesn't like to think a lot of things through. And thank God I don't listen to him quite often. Al, I love you, but come on, man. You should have read those books. They're really good.
But as far as villains go, dude, I got no clue, man. Nothing. It's
I got one you may know, and I have one that you may not know. And I'm going to pick your brain about it, see if what you think. The first one I think is Gore the God Butcher. I know you know who he is.
Yes, definitely.
He's got a tragic backstory. In synopsis, basically, he was a kid. He believed in the gods. So much so that when he actually, in the gods, basically, he prayed to the gods a lot. They never answered his prayers. Then he found out that the gods basically were there. They did listen to his prayers. They just didn't give a shit. They basically were just drinking and laughing, ha ha he, and he resented the gods. I think eventually he got some kind of blade. I don't know where he got it from. Like I said, I'm just trying to do a synopsis. You know more about Gore than I do. And I think that's a character that he could, you know, he could play. So what do you think about Gore the God Butcher?
That could be one, definitely. It's trying to think what she, you know, during that run. That's why I'm actually kind of cheating, guys. Sorry, but I'm just trying to find maybe some villains I could find in her history that she had to deal with. And I really don't see many that she had to. But that one could be one. I could do that. I could see that one. Yes, I really don't have any, man. That's the one area. That's like I said, that's a empty spot for me.
Okay, I got one more for you, and this one, like I said, I don't think you may know. This is actually Odin's brother, Cole Bornson, and he is the god of fear. Now, this is an interesting way you could tie that into basically, Thor's family lineage. You know, he's basically an uncle you haven't seen for a long time. He's imprisoned. I mean, you could do almost like the Hela thing, but he is the god of fear. I don't know how they're going to write the script or not. Maybe you could flip it on its tail and make Thor basically under the influence of Kull. And maybe he goes after Jane Foster. And that's one of the reasons that Jane has to take up the mantle of Thor to stop this other evil Thor from going nuts. So just, you know, a couple of ideas I'm just throwing out there. I think those are the two, you know, and it ties back into Odin. I mean, he's not in there, but it's a family thing. And all the thing about the Thor movies, it's all about family, you know, to quote Vin Diesel. So it's a good way to tie it all back in together, especially, you know, with that freaked up family that they have. So.
Yeah. This is really the start of the new phase too. I mean, when you really think about it, we're going to have Black Widow, but Black Widow is a post or pre one. So really Thor would probably be that The Eternals. Yeah. So maybe, hopefully, I mean, because this is still in the overall arcing world of the Avengers series, maybe there might be a tie in there with the Eternals doing something with Thor. Because again, the last thing I think you and I had read was they were saying that, you know, Feige was going to keep these as smaller arcs. They weren't doing this 10-year thing again. No, it was only going to be like 3-4 years. Mm-hmm. So I think they're going to jump quick into it, not, you know, wait for like the post credit scenes and things like that to connect the pieces. So I would probably, that's why I'm struggling, I think, with a good villain for them, because I think it's going to take place in this overall arc. And if anything's out there, you know, to make our wishes come true, I would love to see a Galactus. And I think, Galactus is part of Thor's, you know, mythos in as far as a villain.
I think he'll be out there eventually. I don't think they're going to put somebody that big in right now. I mean, literally that big in right now.
Well, you're going to need to. I mean, this is
eventually
seeing the Fantastic Four down the road and everything like that. So it's.
Well, the way I look at it is like this. If you're going to hire Christian Bale to be a villain in your movie, do you want to make him all CGI? You kind of want to make them a little bit of practical effects on him. I get that. But if you're just going to like waste him if he's going to be all CGI'd.
No, I mean, you got to think some of the best actors, you know, sometimes it's some of the best scenes of some of the best actors. The one I can think of where you never see him, Hugo Weaving, V for Vendetta. You hired an amazing actor. You cover his face.
He was all voice in that movie too.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. You can definitely do that to where, you know, you can cover him up and give him that acting, because, you know, part of Bale's, you know, abilities and his takeaway or his abilities as an actor is, you know, his voice. Sorry guys, I'm struggling today. Sorry.
No, his voice and the way he throws himself in a role too. I mean, if you look at all the roles that he's done in the past, he dives in. I mean, physically as well. I mean, I'll give you two instances, The Machinist and Batman. Like, he did The Machinist before Batman. If you look at The Machinist, he was frighteningly scared. I mean, skinny.
Yeah.
And then he goes to Batman. And the first couple months, he's huge, but then he actually had to trim down. I mean, there was a famous thing that when he came into Batman Begins the filming, he was just a giant bear. He had this like gigantic jacket on. He was just huge. And the producers and directors like, hey, man, you got to slim down. Batman is it, because they kept calling him Fat Man, which I thought was kind of funny. But eventually he trimmed down. We got Batman Begins. But it's going to be interesting to see what he's going to do in this world. But I'm fascinated. And I'm all, and almost fascinated to the point that I wonder if down the road, and this is me speculating, I mean, they got Michael Keaton in the MCU. Now you got Christian Bale in the MCU. Do you pull the other Batman actors? I mean, like I said before, what do you think of George Clooney being like a Norman Osborn? That'd be kind of funny. Throw him in there and he's
true.
Good enough actor, he could do it.
Yeah, he definitely could.
I don't know about Val Kilmer if he's doing anything these days, and you know, Adam West is no longer with us tragically.
Val Kilmer could come in as a do voice acting. He's always done, I thought
I don't know. Then maybe Ben Affleck, you throw him in as the Juggernaut. I mean, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I'm just speculating, throwing things out there. These are really good actors, and it's always like for me as a Batman, you know, fanboy, that seeing these guys in other roles always brings a little tinkle to my heart. So
a twinkle.
Oh, twinkle. Did I say tinkle? Yeah, I'm sorry. Did. I meant twinkle.
I just want to make sure you weren't doing something in your pants over there.
Not right now. Maybe after the show. These Coronas are pretty good, actually. But yeah, so Christian Bale is going to be on board, and we look forward to that one. Next one I got is something that Mike doesn't, the captain doesn't know about because he refuses to look at. But we got our first look at the Matt Reeves Batmobile this week. Week before that, we got the look at the suit, which is Arkham style. You go in year one. And the Batmobile kind of represents the year one style because it's basically a muscle car. He said it was a muscle car. Nobody believed it. It's got a slick kind of Camaro look. It's got a big engine in the back. No fins or anything like that. Like I said, very practical, like the Batcycle. This is something I can comment on because I know the captain hasn't seen it. At first, I was kind of like, it took me back a little bit because I had to realize which Batman we're getting. And we're getting the one, basically, as Matt Reeves has said before, this is going to be in his second year. Or third year, I believe. Second or third year. So he's new. So he's not going to be able to build all those fancy tech stuff. You know, he doesn't have Lucius at this time. At least I don't believe he does. So he's building all this stuff himself. You know, he has the money, but it's him building it. So it makes sense that the you have a Batmobile built out of a muscle car. And it would have certain gadgets on it. But you're not going to get the tank style like you have in Nolan films or in the Affleck films. And it's practical. So after a while, I talked to my friend Reggie also, sent him the pic, and he said the same thing. And, you know, you're basically, this is the younger guy. This is the year three. So to me, it makes sense. I got to see how it's going to look on screen to make a final judgment. But I dig it. I dig it. Like I said, it took me back for a minute because I'm used to the tank style formula that we've had in the past. So we're going back to basically the Adam West style Batman with the Impala type of build.
Well, I mean, everybody, they all had cars except for Bale. I mean, that's it. I mean, and then really, when you think about it, the only one that wasn't a year one or two was Ben. So, I mean, what they're doing is just what I expected. They're a new actor. You're going to start, you know, the first couple of years instantly. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm just kind of like saying why I'm trying not to let social media spoil this for me. Because I think they're just going, showing too much behind the curtain for me right now. Like I'm okay with a couple here and there. Like I've seen, like there are other movies out there that are getting ready to drop that we really haven't seen much behind the scenes. That's what I'd like to see. This is just way too much. I understand they're all excited and stuff, but
no, I can understand your ideas too. Like, you know,
leave stuff to the imagination.
Let me
get excited when the trailer does drop and they got the big bombastic orchestra going on and they see the car stripping. Then I'm going to be watching. Then I'm going to get excited. And that's the moments I want. You know,
we should be getting that first trailer. I would speculate Comic-Con.
Probably.
I'm thinking Comic-Con, yeah, because we're in March now, so you have.
They have another couple months to finish wrapping up.
Yeah, so I think that, yeah, they should have some footage by July.
Yeah, because that'll be the best time to do it. You know, drop that.
Oh yeah, that's when you want to do it.
Yeah, then they finally need a presence to make a presence out in.
They need to kick ass this year. Like they've done pretty well the last couple of years, but I'm talking they need to blow people away. They need to come out of that con like, oh my god, like DC, they're doing some stuff now because Marvel has always had that presence even when they're barely there. Like they always had Robert Downey Jr. going in there and Tom Hiddleston when he dresses Loki that one year, which I thought was great. They always have something. They do fun things, and they need to do fun things for the fans. It's just like they go out there sometimes, and they're so nonchalant about it. It's like, hey, yeah, we got this.
Well, they're not nonchalant because they this is one thing I think, and I've noticed, and I used to hate you saying it, and I still don't agree completely with it, but Warner Brothers is too big. It's too many of those cigar smoking executives that you always talk about mm-hmm. still in the background that they expect people. No, this is the original comic book stuff. You better like it. And it's almost how their attitude is. And it's not that way. You have to give us something we want to see. You know, we're just not going
to. And you have to be excited about it. Every Sunday I get excited doing this podcast. I'm excited about when I talk about it. I'm excited about the ideas that we formulate off air. It's exciting for me. And if you're going to sell me a product like DC is going to sell these new DC movies coming down the pike, be excited about it. Like, hey, we got this. We got this. We got this. And like, you know, pump it up. Like, oh, okay. Because guess what? If you're excited, I'm going to get excited. And I'm going to look forward to seeing anything you're going to throw down the pike. So they really need to come out guns a-blazing. Excuse me. Cool. This Corona's getting to me, but I'm yeah.
but that's why I'm not wanting to see those things. That's why I'm trying to. Like I said it earlier. I was like, you know, I'm not letting social media control me in this aspect. I'm taking that one little tiny nugget of information that's coming out in the Facebook world and Twitter, and I'm not looking. I'm like bypassing because I want to be excited again. I haven't been excited about a lot of the releases from DC lately because they haven't. Hit that geek spot in me. Anyway.
They're close. They're very close. I will say they're close to me. It is. I mean, I don't know about your opinion, but I think a lot of the DC ones they release are close. Like Birds of Prey had its moments.
It did, but it wasn't.
Had there. Its moments, but it wasn't. Just left something. You know, it just. I don't know. We could talk about that movie another time. Yeah. But it's just one of those things. Like Shazam. When I saw Shazam, I was like, oh my god,
that was one of the last moments.
And people crapped in that movie. And I remember when we left that movie, you and I. There's a podcast about it, Trick or Archives. But we were so giddy about it. It was like because you're right, and it takes it back to the original point that you were making before. There was a lot of stuff we didn't know about, like. You know, spoilers, if you haven't seen the movie, it's been 2 years old.
Yeah.
The Shazam family shows up.
Exactly.
That totally blew me. I was like, I looked at it. I was like, oh my god, they're actually doing it. And it freaked me out. And that was a surprise. That was like, okay, you know what? I get it now. I get it.
Alrighty. So those are the only your news.
Yeah, ones? Those are all my own too. You have anything, Captain?
No, nothing in news.
Oh, okay. Well,
squat.
Well, you have to excuse the captain. He's had a very long weekend. So.
Yeah, it was a bit of a long weekend, but yeah, in fact, like I said, you know, the news are just in general all week long. There really wasn't much kicking around. I think that's why you came up with this theme we're getting ready to jump into.
Yes.
So let's get out of the admissions ward. All right. And again, I'm going to let Kane go ahead and take this one over. It was his idea about this theme. We haven't done theme shows in a while. I know we started off like kind of that's how we started doing, you know, the girls are all right or who deserves a movie, that kind of thing. And us breaking it down because that's what we used to do. We would sit at the Winchester and, you know, share a pint and cover, you know, our ideas and stuff. And that's what the birth of this is. Oh, yeah. The Here's Asylum. So this is what we're looking at.
And it's always been the best times is that we sit here, we just take a little subject, piece it apart, break it apart, give our thoughts and opinions, and let you listeners give your thoughts and opinions to on the Facebook and Twitter page that we greatly appreciate. So the theme I came up with this week after pondering a long, long time was villains. And I broke it down a little bit. Villains, basically, what in essence makes a really good villain? Are villains essentially not the bad guys, but essentially the heroes in their own mind? And I would also say, you know, give me five. Give me five that you think can basically, you know, accomplish this. Because to me, the worst villains in the world are the mustache twirling. Hey, guess what? I want to rule the world. Okay, that's basically every villain in almost every cartoon. I want to rule the world. Why? Because just cause. Okay. And I think as I've gotten older, maybe it's me, I like villains who are more complex. You know, give me an idea. Why are you doing it? And as I always said before, and I've said in podcasts in the past, the best villains are those who think they are the good guys. And that's been my experience. And I love villains that they have purpose. Like, you know what? I get it. And in a way, you're almost rooting for that villain. Like, yeah, he's right. Like, you guys are wrong. And I was always fascinated when I was diving into this subject for the week, and I was looking at a lot of people, villains and on screen, villains in comics and books, and a lot of the ones I looked up to were the mustache twirling ones, which I stayed away from. But the ones that I actually did find that has some depth to them, you know, I was like, I'll give you an example. Syndrome. You guys ever watch Incredibles Part 2? Syndrome is, or I think it was Incredibles 1, I believe, or 2.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was Syndrome.
Was he 1?
Yeah, he was. Okay. Yeah, he was the right one in the really, really, really tight outfit.
Okay. Yeah. Disturbingly tight, by the way.
Oh, boy. I think anyway. Voiced by Jason Lee.
Was it Jason Lee? Yeah, it was Jason Lee. Okay. I was going to say Jonah. I don't know why I said, I was going to say somebody else. Jonah Rex, Jonah Hex. I don't know why I say Jonah Hex. Anyway. But Syndrome had a basic compromise when he was a little kid. Mr. Incredible came up to him and he's like, hey, man, you know, I want to be just like you. And Mr. Incredible basically just blew him off. He's like, you know, it's basically one of those things that when you meet your hero, he's not exactly the guy you think he is. So that Syndrome grew up with resentment all those years later towards him. And he became the villain. So in a way, the hero made the villain. And his conviction, his ideas, he was right. He was definitely, in my opinion, I think he was right. He was justified for his actions. Like, hey, you know, I want to help you out. I want to help you save the world. And basically your guy's saying, no, I don't need your help. I don't want your help. Why are you bothering? Basically taking the idea of like, oh my God, I strive to be like you. And saying, no, you're not good enough. I don't want you to be with me. You're nothing. Get lost, kid. And hence, you get Syndrome. Which I thought was a, you know, he's an animated character in The Incredibles. And everybody's like, oh, he's an idiot. But I go, if you look deep down at what Syndrome stands for, he wasn't really wrong.
Very true. Very true. But he wasn't your first choice, was he?
No, he wasn't my first choice, but okay. I kind of bled into him.
So. I mean, you're going long on Syndrome here. Is that one of your choices?
Yeah, I know. But he's one of the five. But I just felt that as far as like the dichotomy of the villain, when you break it down,
right.
He's one of those things that you, he's not mustache twirling. He's not about the world. He's all about a singular focus.
There are so many of them out there. Like when I was sitting down, when you told me this and I sat there, I took a break when I was at the Podfest this week. And I'm like, man, and I literally just like pulled up a list of villains and I'm like, man, there's a lot of mustache twirling villains out there. Like he was saying, like even the ones that most people would go, oh man, that's a great villain. I'm like, yeah, but not really. There's some Spider-Man ones that I'm like, those really are mostly just mustache twirling villains when you really break it down.
Yeah. And some of them are iconic. Yeah. Like to me, Venom is a mustache twirling villain. Sorry.
Exactly. Yeah.
But like, what purpose does he really have? Okay, I hate Spider-Man. What else? That's it. What about Carnage? He's crazy. He's got a symbiote. What does he want to do? He wants to kill everybody. Why? I just want to kill everybody.
Yeah. That well, with the recent Absolute Carnage, they at least finally gave him a purpose. You know, about his madness. You know, that's something at least they were able to kind of redeem him on this arc. I don't know what they'll do for, you know, going forward, but
yeah.
What's your first choice, since this was your idea?
Okay.
Who do you have?
Well, I guess I'll have to, I said Syndrome already, so I let the cat out of the bag. But my first choice was Thanos. It's pretty obvious. You know, if you've seen the page, you know, many nights, you know, on my personal Facebook page, I'll do a lot of quotes of Thanos. If you guys don't know, you probably do. But, you know, when I first saw the Avengers movie and I was trying to think, you know, how they're going to do Thanos. Because in the comic books and in the animated series, he was very mustache twirling. He was very comical. He was like, I am, every sixth sentence, I am Thanos. I am Thanos. I am Thanos. And annoyed the piss out of me. I'm like, this is the Thanos we're going to get in the MCU? I hope not. I hope they change him.
Well, especially in the comic books, that he was doing what he was doing for love. He wasn't as bad in the comic books, but you know, he was doing what he was doing for love, for the love of death. And death was a character. So that's, you know, so even then that's still a kind of mustache, you know, but not as cheesy as the animated. Trust me, I'm right there with you, man. That was just
That animated one is very, very bad. Very bad. But when he was brought on screen and he had a guy like Josh Brolin voicing him, like, okay, so where we're going. And the first instance you saw him, like you saw him in one scene in Guardians. And he had that presence of, okay, all right, he's frightening, but you got to give me something with this. And I think in that first scene in the Avengers Infinity War, when he's on the ship and everything is destroyed, you said they pan to him and he's basically lifting Thor up and throwing him down like nothing. And he starts, you know, spewing his speeches and you realize like, you know, this guy's not a killer. Like the ideas that he has is not about ruling the world. And it makes sense. And as the movie goes along, there's a speech that he has to Gamora when he finally meets Gamora for the first time when she's very young. He basically annihilates half that planet. But when he explains himself to Gamora, he's like, hey, and she's like, you killed half my people. You're a murderer. And then he comes back. He's like, yes, I did kill half your people, but look at that planet right now. It has more food. It's plentiful right now. The population has grown. The technology has grown all because of me. And he wants to do that everywhere. He's like, you know what? Every world out there in the universe is overpopulated. You're overpopulated. There's not enough food going around, not enough technology going around. You know, all I want to do is wipe half of it away. You're still going to be alive. But you know what? Everything's resources, everything like that's going to come back. It's all going to be in abundance instead of you struggling to find like a breadcrumb. So his ideas, although very misplaced, he was very idealistic when the way he went about it. So in a way, he was not really the bad guy. The Avengers were the bad guys who were stopping him. Now, yes, he committed half the world genocide. Yes, that is truly bad. But his ideals were not bad. It came from like a point of like, you know, it happened on my planet. That's basically what happened on Titan. He was like, hey, look, we have to do this to stop it from happening. And he had that great speech with Doctor Strange. He's like, yeah, Titan was great once. And then, you know, I had a nice solution to stop everything that was going to happen. And then it shows Titan now where everything is disheveled, destroyed, everybody's dead. He's like, nobody listened to me. All I wanted to do was this. And since I couldn't save my world, I want to save yours. And I've always thought like, wow, like, you know, and the Russo brothers said so eloquently, like he's going to be the Darth Vader of the MCU. That's a high standard, very high standard. But if you think about it, he was more idealistic than Darth Vader. He had a point to everything he was doing. And to me, he's going to be number one head and shoulders.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, I mean, he is one that you and I always talk about. You know, we when we get to talking about certain villains and certain things, you know, it's about how we agree with what you're saying. It's how you're saying it, or in this case, doing it. We agree that there's a problem, but you cross that line, and that's you know something you know, I know you and I have always talked about with that character. Mm-hmm. Mike, my first character, very very basic, very he doesn't have much reason to do what he's doing other than the fact he's been hurt and hurt thousands and thousands of times. My first pick was Doomsday, villain of Superman as well as the Justice League, created by Dan Jurgens, and you know, debuted originally his first cameo was Superman 17 in 1992 November, but then his fully came out a month later. And if nobody's ever read The Death of Superman or the lead up to The Death of Superman, this basically his origin is he is a Kryptonian. He was born in the prehistoric times of Kryptonian before Superman's people were there. He was basically they were calling him the Ultimate, and there was a scientist Bertrand, and what he was doing, he took a baby, a humanoid baby, and sent him out into this harsh world of the prehistoric Krypton, and the baby was just decimated by the creatures that were out there. So then he would go out and pick up whatever he could find left of the baby, DNA of some sort, and clone the baby, create it again. He did this to this child over and over and over and like millions of times until it came to the point where Doomsday was able to stop the creatures. And what was happening is with each time the baby was dying, he was learning how to not to die from that thing. Eventually he was able to, again, like I said, stop the killings of himself, and went after Bertrand, destroyed him. After that, he jumped into a ship that was sent there to refuel and bring supplies for the Bertrand's scientists. He hopped on board that ship and took off across the galaxy. Ended up crossing paths with a young Prince Uzox, who was there for his wife, for his soon-to-be bride. And he Doomsday basically destroyed this planet and turned it into, you know, the Prince Uzox was there to get some gas or get some like fuel for his world, his world being War World. So Prince Uzox was a young Darkseid. And so Darkseid had to deal with him. Soon he left there, journeyed across the across the galaxy again, ran into the paths of the Green Lanterns, beaten up by, Zaron Pyle was one of the Green Lanterns that he came in contact with, but he sensed the power of the Green Lantern core in the battery. So he headed off to find the battery. And so the Guardians of the Universe sent thousands of Guardian or Green Lanterns out to stop him, which in turn he slaughtered. And it took one single guardian who sacrificed his life and was able to stop Doomsday and send him again on his way to get away. Then he landed on another planet, spent 3 years destroying that planet, and the royal family basically combined their life forces to blast him. And they thought they killed him, so they placed him into a metal coffin and launched him into space, which is where we pick up on Superman number 17, Man of Steel, where he basically comes out and his first reaction is he sees a bird land on his shoulders and he just kills it. So that's our first reaction, is his destruction. And then, of course, he, you know, just tears through the United States on his way to Metropolis. And of course, if you know we know the overall story. But his, as a villain, he was hurt. The reason he went and made a beeline for Metropolis was because he sensed Clark's Kryptonian DNA, and all he knew was that thing hurt me and I have to stop it. So in a way, he became this destroying villain that everybody was fearful of. But when you actually sat down and looked at, well, why, what was his main, you know, purpose behind it, was to destroy because he had been hurt so many times over and over again by a Kryptonian.
I remember the series Krypton got canceled, I think, last year, which is awful, awful choice. They should never cancel that series. They had an episode with Doomsday, and they were dealing with similar styles to that origin story you just eloquently said, where they just kept experimenting on him, you know, but in the form of Krypton, he basically was, he was a soldier, and the scientists of Krypton were trying to make the ultimate soldier, and they kept, and basically he's like, hey, I'm doing this for Krypton. I'm doing this for Krypton. I'm doing this for Krypton. He would tell his wife that each and every time. They would subject them to these experiments just to make him stronger and make him faster. And eventually he became the Doomsday that we all know. And the way they defeated him, which was by General Zod, is they broke it down to get into the monster's mind. You know, actually way, way back, like in that monster's mind that he had, there were still the guy, the soldier, like, hey, he's all about Krypton. He's all about Krypton. But it was so diluted with all the experiments and all the things that he went through that that love was barely in there. And that was the way that Zod got to him, basically controlled him. So very similar to the comics, not quite, but
yeah, they couldn't have done that. Yeah, it was, when you read the origin of him, it's really like, you know, when you literally see a baby that they just shoot out to this barren wasteland of Krypton. Mm. So what's your next one?
Excuse me, almost had a little bubble in my throat. My next one is Dr. Doom. Dr. Doom, of course, from Latveria. And if you don't know the history of Dr. Doom, he did not get powers in space by electrical things. So just take that away. Don't ever watch it. Do you remember the Fantastic Four movies?
Yes, I do.
He went to space with the Fantastic
Four. That's why I just said, what?
I was just one of the people like, do not take the origins of the movies and think that he went to space and had electrical powers. Because don't, please. Ugh, that's a bad memory. Actually, Dr. Doom was an intelligent scientist working by Reed Richards. Very intelligent. Like, he created his armor. He was almost like a very Tony Stark-like type character, but he was way smarter. And he was doing everything for his country of Latveria, which he was the ruler of Latveria. So anybody who was trying to invade Latveria, hey, you have to go through me. And the guy was mad intelligent as well. He was smarter than Reed Richards. He was stronger than the Thing, more elusive than the Invisible Girl, and quicker than the, what's his name? I forgot his name. Johnny Storm. That was the big thing when the Fantastic Four, like, why are they just fighting one guy? Why is he so tough? And that's the way that Stan Lee would break it down. He was like, you know, he had all the powers of those four. That's why it was always four against one, because he had, you know, he had basically all their strengths, and that's why it would take the four of them to beat him. But he's a fascinating character because he's all about his country. He's all about improving things as well. And he's all about the betterment of the environment. Like the guy rules the country. So he wants to make sure his country is intact. Like they never did any of those things in the movies, which pissed me off. But the guy is basically a socialist. He's like, hey, I'm doing this for us. Yes, it might seem bad, but it's about his people and everything he went through. Like, he was not really a bad guy if you think about it. But if you effed with him or Latveria, you'd have a problem. There's many comic book runs that's out there that he's like one of the most baddest MCU villains that could be if they did him right. And I think if you keep his idealism almost like Thanos, but not on such a big scale, more of a smaller scale and more personal, because, you know, the Fantastic Four back in the day, you know, Reed and him were friends, like best friends, I believe. And then something happened. Depends which comic book one you read. You know, I think it's a couple of them. But something happened between the two. Always an argument between best friends. It happens. And they went their own ways. But, you know, Reed understands why. And, what's his real name? His name is Ludum. I keep calling him Dr. Doom. Von Doom. Von Doom always had it like, he's like, okay, I understand your ways also, Reed. Like, they understood each other. They were not kind of like to a similar character I think you're going to bring up later on with another relation to somebody else. But he was all about his country, so he's not really a bad guy. I mean, if you think about it, you know, he's just trying to make sure, hey, don't mess with my people. Don't mess with my country. This is what I'm... Excuse me. So, yeah.
All right. Very good. Yeah, actually, it looks like we have a lot of Marvel. I was expecting more more DC on our...
Yeah. On
our list here. But my next one actually is probably one of the newest villains, probably that will be on this list. She is a I don't want to call her a mutant because she really wasn't, but she is related to a mutant. Her name is Cassandra Nova. Cassandra Nova was created by writer Grant Morris and artist Frank Quitely. Cassandra first appeared in New X-Men number 114, July 2001. This is how new she is. Cassandra is a... I'm going to try to pronounce this without butchering it, of course, because there's no pronunciations in comic books, but Mumdria, it's a parasite life form, bodiless on the astral plane. And basically the Mumdria that became Cassandra became telepathically entangled with the future Charles Xavier. So basically Charles and her were sharing the same body at the beginning of her life. Charles and her, they were conceived. She was conceived without a body, but they were sharing the same womb basically. And she grew with her brother until that she finally grew her own hands, her own eyes. And she decided to try to kill Charles in utero, basically attempting to strangle him with his own umbilical cord.
Ouch.
Of course, Charles defended himself as being young, but also being the strong mutant he was, and used a psionic blast, which caused, unfortunately, his mother's miscarriage, resulting in her physical body being stillborn, and of course, him being born as is. And she has been around, and one of her biggest areas that she later, she was the one that was responsible for sending off, she was working for a shadow group and had been on destroying Genosa and doing a genocide. She was the one famously for commanding an army of Sentinels, massacring about 16 million mutants at Genosha. And basically her biggest drive is the love and acceptance in feeling left out of Charles Xavier's life. And that's her connection with him. What she has to do is she has to go from body to body to body because she doesn't have her own true form. She will try to make it, but she can't completely do it. So really she becomes this traveling parasite to take over bodies, but she's always after Charles and for the things that she feels that he got that she didn't. And it is basically boiling down to, you know, it's not a mustache twirler. My mother didn't treat you the way she treated me in a basically way. There are some of those villains that are that way, that they feel that they were left out because of certain things. In fact, someone similar in my list comes down later, is kind of has that same issue of them being left out and can't trusting anybody. And that's, you know, that's one of the things I thought that her origin and what she's able to do and bounce around. So you're never sure where she is, but to actually cause the massacre of, you know, 16 million mutants. That makes her a huge villain in my book.
Ew, man. I've heard of her vaguely, but damn, I didn't know she was in charge of that much genocide. Like, good Lord. All because of Charles Xavier.
And just think of the short time she's been. I mean, she's only 19 years, you know, in the comic book world. And I know
fairly young. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's for the comic book world. That's 2 years old, basically, when you really look at it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting choice. Sorry. I was sipping my drink again. I guess I'm next. And to be similar, not quite similar, but I guess we're going to go with family drama and we're going to go with Loki. And oh boy. If you guys have a family, if you have siblings, if you have brothers, like I have brothers, there's always what's that? Loki had that, you know, depending on what run. I think the newer run of the MCU, when they had Loki and Thor actually being brothers, made a lot more sense. And basically, Loki was always fighting for the love of his father, because his father always failed about it when it comes to family dynamics. You know, there's always that, you know, they every parent loves their kids equally, as they say, but sometimes they treat them differently to a point like, hey, yeah, you know, he's my favorite. You know, he's doing this. He's going to be, you know, he's just the quarterback of the football team. He's get all the girls. That's him. And you sit there sometimes, you're like the loner kid, but still a member of the family, but you're not quite treated as well as your other brother was, maybe. That's kind of the same thing that happens with Thor and Loki. They're very similar in that aspect. That Loki had to sit by and watch Thor. Hey, you know what? You're going to rule Asgard. Even though he didn't really care about ruling Asgard. Loki was all about it. You know, he's a schemer. He's a very intelligent man. Magician at some points. He learned all his stuff from Frigga, his mother. And then he finds out later on, like, hey, you know, why wasn't I being treated like your son? And he finds out he was a member of the Frost Giants. Like one of the biggest enemies that Odin ever had. And in the first Thor movie, there's a great scene. And it's in the vault room where basically he's sitting there. He's talking to Odin. And he's like, so what? You didn't think I was your son? You thought about hiding this from me? He's like, no, you are my son. He's like, no, I'm not your son. That's why you gave Thor everything. That's how I was always, you know, second best. Like I would go on the missions and you didn't care if I came back alive or dead. It was a very powerful scene. And just one of those things like, man, that's a birth of the villain right there. Basically, because he felt so small, you know, to his other siblings. Like he felt that his other siblings got better. And the truth is, like, you know, Thor loved them a lot because that's his brother. But Loki didn't feel that way because he always felt like the outcast. So he had to prove himself to his father. Like everything that he did in that first Thor movie and going forward when he was the villain was to prove like, hey, dad, I belong. I belong. I can be a god just like you. I deserve to sit in that throne one day. And that was his entire goal. Even when it got to the third Thor movie or the second one, I want to be in that throne. I deserve to be up there. And it's not till later on that he made the turn and he realized like maybe I went about things the wrong way. But it's always that sibling rivalry because he felt kind of worthless towards his brother. But truthfully was that his brother did love him and he respected him, but he didn't feel that way because he came from somewhere else. He never felt like a family member. And if you ever had, you know, in my family, you know, I have two other brothers. I'm the middle child. And sometimes you feel that way. Like, wait a minute, he's the older one. There's the baby. And then there's me. Okay, so am I going to get the hand-me-downs? Am I going to get treated like this or that? And it just, you're always fighting to get that respect. You're always fighting. And Loki was always fighting to get that love and respect from his, you know, his father and his siblings, you know, just to be respected. And I think, to me, having a villain like that is it gives you like an emotional connection. And when you're watching villains like that, you need that. You're like, hey, I can connect with that guy. I get that because I have like two brothers like that too. And that's what makes like, this is basically like the subject of this entire podcast today is all about a connection to a villain. Like they're not the mustache twirling. You get why they're doing what they're doing. And in this instance with Loki, he was doing it for what? The love of his father. And he did all that genocide just because he wanted to be accepted. And I've always thought like, man, you know, next to Thanos and a couple others that I have on this list, it's very intriguing. And coming from a siblings that I have, it makes a lot of sense and it really hits home to me. I'll talk to you about it sometime.
Yeah, I definitely understand. I mean, I am an only child with a stepbrother. So, but he was the jock, he was the older one, but he was doing the other things, you know, and I was always the black sheep of the family. So it was okay. I was always okay with my lot in life, but I love the fact that like eventually like Loki and Thor come to terms eventually with their differences and understand Thor's understanding of, okay, you're going to be this, you're going to have this problem. And that's such a scene in the movie. So if you get, because most people are going to, you know, refer to the movies, but that's also in the comic books, like a run of Thor I'm reading right now has literally like Thor sitting on the throne and Loki's just like sitting behind him in the darkness, just poking at him, just like a brother would, you know? So you think you're good enough for sitting on father's throne? Do you know? And of course, Thor's saying, "Oh, no, this is my throne. I built this throne. That throne got destroyed. This is me." And it's just, you know, that little prod and brotherly, you know, poking at that will always be there, you know, because you always are going to have that that relationship back and forth. Unfortunately, I have a stepbrother. We didn't have that kind of tension. I mean, we jokingly, you know, mess with each other, you know, as teenage boys would, just as friends, but you know, we didn't have that brotherly poke.
Well, I had that, like, the reason why Loki hits so close to home is I have a younger brother who was like one of my best friends in the world right now. Like, he really is. We are close. We talked to each other last night for an hour and 30 minutes about a lot of geeky stuff. But, you know, the beginning when I was growing up, you know, he was the younger one. He always got to go to the band lessons. He always got to go play football while I couldn't because, my mother was afraid I was going to get hurt. You know, he was given things.
That soft spot in the back of your head never healed up?
No, it healed. There was a tad of jealousy for a while. I will not lie about that. That's why this character has always hit home to me. I was like, I get where he's coming from because you feel like you're left out. Like, why am I always home and he's always out? Why can't I? And then it causes you to rebel and do things that you don't want to do to get the attention that you never got. And I always felt that Loki was like, you know, he kind of hit home. He's like, oh, he's just trying to get attention. And I get where this guy's coming from. You know, that was me. That was me trying to get attention from my younger brother. Like, my older brother, not so much because he wasn't, you know, there a lot because he was older and he had gone out. But mostly with him. So I can identify with that relationship with Thor and Loki. And it's just like, yeah, you. What are you doing now? Like, what's that? You can't be any better. It's just always that little poke and prod. But as you get older, things change and you mellow out. But, that's my kind of dig Loki. So
very true. Well, mine, again, another Marvel one popping up here on the list. It's kind of crazy. We've only had one DC so far. Mine is Magneto. I know you had Magneto too. So I guess we can both tag team this one here. Magneto, originally named Max Eisenhart. Yes, folks, that is his name, his real name. He was, created by, the one and only Stan Lee and the man, Jack Kirby. Obviously, first appearance in the X-Men number one, cover dated September 1963. He has been both a villain and a comrade to the X-Men, but it's his villainy that, you know, we're going to concentrate on today. That he basically was, the movie sort of was close, but when Max and his family were trying to escape a ghetto back during World War II, they were betrayed, captured. His mother, his father, and his sister were executed and buried in a mass grave together with Max in it. Max survived, possibly due to his mutant abilities. There was no clear answer as to why he survived this, escaping the mass grave. He ultimately was captured again, sent to Auschwitz, where he eventually became a Sonderkommando. And then while in Auschwitz, he reunited with a Romanian girl named Magda, who eventually would father two children for him that we know of as Petro and Wanda. And they fell in love. But eventually his powers showed up and she ran off with his children. I think she died during childbirth. Sorry, that's what it was. But he didn't know about this because she ran off with him, with his children. And then, of course, he wasn't sure about them. And then he just went about his way through the mutant, the mutants coming up into the world. Again, this is very heavy 60s base. I think it's always funny when I hear people today bitching about, oh, there's too much politics in comic books, and there's, you shouldn't put your political views in comic books. And I'm like, did any of you people pick up a book from the 60s? Because the X-Men alone are a political statement of that time. Now, that political statement is common now that we all agreed with that, but back then that was something completely different. We both, you and I have talked about this before with the X-Men. What was it? Xavier was Malcolm X, or no? Or was it Xavier was Malcolm X?
And, no, Xavier was Martin Luther King, and okay. Malcolm X was Magneto. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, you had them, and so you had, that's what those representations were really. You know, when Stan Lee and Jack Kirby were doing these, that was what they were talking about. So then you have, the movies really nail this part is that, he is still struggling from his being discriminated before being a Jew back in Germany. And now he's doing it again he's different because of his abilities, which my abilities should make me stand out and be better, not worse. But then I think it would with him, and what makes him such a good villain is he's carrying the pain of the loss of his family through him throughout all the years. That fuels his cause. It's not always about the mutants. It's about being discriminated against and people wanting to kill you for just being you. But then with his children, it's the weirdest relationship when you actually look at the relationship with him and his kids, is that it's not a relationship of love. It's a relationship of loyalty, that he wants them to be loyal to him, but not love him. And he seems to always keep a distance. And I think it's just because of those experiences with his parents and the experiences, you know, in the concentration camps. So he's a villain because he was truly wounded from, you know, his experiences. I mean, you can't blame him from everything that took place there, but they use that perfectly to translate that into, you know, the 1960s, 70s, 80s, you know, so on and so forth with the mutant rights and the mutant registration and everything like that. And again, being back, you know, brought up in the 60s, had the rights movement. Yeah. So, I mean, it's like I said, and it's a very political character that you have to argue. And that's one thing with the X-Men that made them so popular and what made Marvel boost up in the 60s, because they were failing horribly, was that you had these college students and these hipsters basically back then, you know, were reading this going, man, they're talking about what's happening in our world now. And they could understand that what Magneto was doing and why he was doing it was for the right. But again, I guess he falls into sort of that Thanos, you know, that is doing it right, or he's doing it for the right reasons, but the wrong way.
Yeah, pretty much. He's an idealistic character like Thanos. You know, as you always said, like in the comic books, like where it came from, I always go to the movies because I think, you know, they take the source material and they expand upon it. And one of the best things they expanded upon was like that first X-Men movie. What do you see? You see Auschwitz. You see the concentration camp. So, you know, like right away, it's going to be heavy. You know what this man is going through, like, and you know where he's coming from. X-Men First Class as well. They go back to the younger Magneto, again with the Kevin Bacon character, where he's in that office and he's forcing, like, hey, I want you to move that coin, and he can't quite do it. So Kevin Bacon's like, hey, move the coin. Of course, he doesn't say it in that language. He says it in German. He's like, move the coin. You can do it. And he just rubs him, like, hey, man, you can do it. Move the coin. And he can't do it. He can't do it after a couple attempts. So his mother's right there, takes the gun, shoots his mother right in front of his face. And that anger fuels him, where he basically destroys the whole room. And Kevin Bacon just looks at him and is like, hey, I told you could do it. All you needed was a little push. And that was Magneto's arc in that movie going forward. It was like, hey, my anger is going to fuel me. I'm going to find this guy. I'm going to kill every single one of them. And it was almost like a flip kind of like way, because you have this angry Jewish guy going after all the German guys, which if you think about it, makes sense, because, hey, kill those bastards for what they did. And he's going out and he's just basically like murdering them. Like when he goes into that bar, that one scene, he's sitting there, he's drinking. He's like, hey, talking in the German language. Hey, what's going on? He sees the boat and he's just sitting there casually drinking. And like what those German officers look at him, they look at his arm and they see like the tattooed numbers of what he was. And they find out who he is, and he murders them all. In another great scene, he's just so idealistic. And you can understand where he's coming from. Like, the best conversations are him and Charles. Their viewpoints are so off, but they can relate to each other. Like the first X-Men movie, where they're in that inside of the hall and you see Jean Grey talking and he's like, hey, what's going on? What's happening here? He's like, are you still trying to get in my head, Charles? He's like, I'm just trying to see if my friend is still there. And he's like, the world belongs to us, Charles, not them. And it's just like that idealistic thing I love about Magneto. We could talk about Magneto all night long, and I would never get bored of this character, because he's got those ideals. You get where he's coming from. And like we said before, as I'll go back, these villains, they're so interesting because you get where they're coming from. They come from a place of pain. They come from a place of neglect. They come from this dark place that in a way you think it's kind of like bad, but it's not, because you have to look at it from a certain point of view.
Very good. Yeah. And he basically, where his name came from, because he started as Max. he eventually changed it to Magnus when they moved out to Russia for with Magda. But then after what happened with Magda, that's when he got the name Eric Lyncher. So
okay, I was gonna ask. I was like, when did he get?
Yeah, there? Because everybody refers to him as Eric now, but really in the origin story, it was Max Eisenhardt, and then he took some conversions and stuff. And one of the interesting facts as I was reading, well, wasn't with Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, but it was during the 80s run. And I'm drawing a blank on the gentleman's name, but he originally, when he took over the run, he wanted to kill off Xavier and make Magneto the runner of the school, and have sort of a more edgier version of it. And I thought that would have been good, interesting way to, take and see how he would take that anger and turn it, to doing something positive. And again, with him and Xavier, they're really not off. They have the same message. It's just how that message is being done. That's what makes the new run for the X-Men so interesting. That I like is that they've all yes, we know we've never seen eye to eye, but we do have the same goal.
Yeah, that's the best part of their relationship to me. And even on screen and on the comic book, it's just like you just said. I think somebody on YouTube, they took all the clips of every X-Men movie and they just put Magneto and Professor X just talking. Like, hey, this is where I'm coming from. This is where you're coming from. And it's so when I hear those guys talk, I'm glued. I'm like, okay, I want to hear what these guys are going to say, because they're both not wrong. They're really not wrong. They're, like you just said, coming about it from a different point of view. And you understand both of them. That's why I love this character so much. I mean, I could maybe Professor X when we do a Heroes one, who knows? But he's just a character that can never get old to me because he's so idealistic. I'm interested to see, like, in future MCU movies, how they're going to change his origin, because they're going to have to change his origin. They're not going to do Auschwitz. They're not going to do World War II. They're going to have to do something different. But in this new X-Men run, which you have covered a lot, his origin story would kind of fit this new MCU. So I'm just interested to see where they're going to go with this character.
Perfect. What do you have next?
I have one, Roy Batty. And I'll just say this. I have seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on the shoulder of Orion. I've watched sea beams glitter in the dark near in the transient gate. All those moments will be lost in time like tears in the rain. He's one of my favorite characters, obviously an android from the Blade Runner film. You didn't think much of him in this movie at first. Oh, he's just a typical android. But when you think of his beliefs and what he wants to do, the guy basically is just trying to find out who created him to live longer, because he wants to live. He wants to be human. That's all it was. You know, his death scene is one of the most tragic scenes and most beautiful scenes of all time. And his point of view, again, what was his goal? He wanted to get a bunch of androids, or replicants as they were called in the film, to extend their life, because the replicants in Blade Runner did not have a long lifespan. They had a certain lifespan and basically you're done. And then you get rebooted and you get done again. But this replicant could think out loud. He's like, he thought human. And he was not thinking for just himself. He was thinking for the upper replicants as well. He's like, we don't deserve to be treated like this. You know, we can be treated as humans. We want to feel things. We want to go walking out in the sun. We want to feel rain. We want to have relationships. We want to have kids. And that kind of threw the maker away. And basically his whole premise of the movie was finding these people. Like, how can we live longer? How can we live longer? And that was his cry to the entire film. And he's another one. Like, you can see his point of view. He didn't want to die. His whole mission statement is he did just not want to die. He wanted to live as a human. And I always thought, like, Roy Batty, another underrated villain, that you can see where he's coming from. He was very human. Yes, he's a replicant, but he was very human in his approach and every single mannerism that he had. God rest Rutger Hauer's soul. Oh, great performance in that film. You truly missed. And he's another one, not quite as idealistic as the other ones, but basically, you know, his whole thing, I want to be human. I want to live. That's it. A pure premise. I just want to live.
Very cool. Yeah. He's always been on the top, one of my top villains in when it comes to movies.
Yeah. Another great one. So, yeah.
And is that your last one?
Yes, sir. Because okay. I mentioned Syndrome already.
All right. Well, I will do my last one. I had actually two, but I think I'm just going to go for the gut. I'm going to jump over one. I had one was Amanda Waller. Just a true evil bitch in every sense of the word, you know, but I think to finish it out, we need to go with the big one. I'm going to pull out the big guns.
Oh boy.
One, Alexander Joseph Luther. character created by Jerry Siegel, Joe Shuster. Lex Luthor originally appeared in Action Comics number 23. The date, I think, was around April 1940. He debuted 2 full years after Superman's debut. And just basically, he's just been the endeared arch nemesis of Superman. Now, originally, he was the antithesis of the mustache twirling villain. His origin was simply the scientist. I'm going to get him, ha ha ha. And this character has morphed and changed into such a deep villain. He went from that to, if you go back until I think it was like the 60s and 70s, he took on more of the crime boss kind of role. They got rid of that. You know, if you have anybody wants to see that villain or that version, definitely always, check out Superman with Christopher Reeves. Also, The Last Superman with Superman Returns with Brandon Routh and Kevin Spacey playing, basically playing Gene Hackman, Luthor. But it was basically the businessman. It was more of a crime lord businessman. But in 1986, that's when we were given the modern version of Lex Luthor. Was done during the event, Crisis of Infinite Earths. And basically, he became largely greed, ego, extreme xenophobia. Like I said, he was less of a mad scientist and more of a heartless narcissist. And really, when you boil down Luthor, it's about him. And I don't care what anybody says, we are all narcissists inside. We have a bit of narcissist in us. Some of us are up to 10. Some of us are down to 1 or 2. We all do certain things for ourselves. Luthor will always save the world. He will even work with Superman every now and then, but the end is always the same. He's doing something for himself. It's not about saving the day or trying to do better with Superman and build a better one. No, it's about him. At the end, no one can glorify him if the world is destroyed. It's really what it boils down to. So that's why he's saving it. He's still got to have that. Even with those circumstances, though, Lex still finds a way to set himself apart from other villains. I'm going to use a couple of yours, in fact. Characters like Dr. Doom, Thanos, and Darkseid definitely fit the mold of a villain, but even they have motivations that go beyond their ego. We've given all of those examples already. You could even argue with villains like Dr. Doom often blurs the line because their actions sometimes seem aligned with what most consider a greater good for Latveria. But everything Luthor does is for Luthor. With Lex Luthor, though, there's no blurred lines. He's not a Dr. Doom who feels like he needs to rule the world to ensure that it's free from want and suffering. From Lex's point of view, ruling the world and destroying Superman are simply a means to further glorify his ego and fuel his narcissists. That's just it. I mean, he's just your ultimate narcissist. I mean, you look at any version of him from, like I said, 86 on, it's all about Lou. It's all about Lex. Even if you take in the Superman movies, it's about him getting property, because Dad always said, man's not a man without property. It's always back down to him, and that's just how it is. He is the most brilliant man in the world, in the DC world, probably the most brilliant man, and yet it's not about that. It's not about helping people. It's not about, it's not even all of it's it, even with Superman, it's about stopping Superman because Superman's taking his credit. And yeah. So, like I said, he is to me the antithesis of a great villain and one of the first villains.
Yeah. And a true narcissist that he is. I mean, he actually goes up to be the president of the United States, which is actually a great run also, in true narcissistic form. And what I also like about Lex too is he will sit there and say he's the perfect politician as well. He'll sit there and say, "Oh, I'm just trying to save the world from this." He will spin it around and turn Superman into the villain. That's one of his best skills that he's done. Why you want this guy to save the world? It should be me. I should save the world. This guy's going to destroy it, because he's always had that fear. No guy with that power should be running around unchecked. So if you think about it from that point of view, he's not wrong. He's not really wrong. He just said, hey, I want to protect my people.
But it's
more about him. Yeah. Because he wants to be the one protecting the people. It's all about him doing
going, it. Oh, thank you for saving us. Not this alien, this thing that ruined his world. You know, he built Metropolis up to be to where he was always the tallest one looking down. And guess what? He's not the one looking down. There's somebody just above him at all times.
Yep. And he can't take that. He has to be on top. That's why he is the true narcissist. And he's a great character, dude. Great character. I'm going to give you a little, there's a animated movie. I'm not sure if you recall it. And it kind of fits into this conversation. It was an animated movie. I'm not sure when it came out. And it was basically another animated movie with Superman. And Lex had gotten the powers of Superman in this movie. And he's about to kill Superman. There's a moment he's about to do it, and then he stops. And then he starts looking around, and then he starts hearing everybody's heartbeat. And then it goes deeper, and then he's like, I understand now. He's like, I can feel everything, every cell, every comment, like everything in the world. I get why he does what he does. Like, I can see it now.
That's and not, I thought, that's, I think you're thinking Brainiac.
Is it Brainiac?
There's one where Superman takes Brainiac out of the ship and throws him into mud. And, you know, Superman's like, you feel the mud on you. That's disgusting. He starts hearing it. There might be one that,
I don't know. I have to look it up and find out. The Brainiac one, I think you're right about too, but I'm talking about the Lex one where he finds a way to get actually Superman's powers. And he just feels that, but before he kills him, he's like, wait a minute. I get it. And then instant next Superman stops him, of course. But, for that little instant, he's like, I can feel what this guy goes through every single day. He can hear every heartbeat, everything that's going on, and it must be maddening. And in that moment, you know, he gets distracted. But I just always thought, like, wow, he had that little empathetic moment. What was that?
Oh, sorry. I was bringing something up and uploaded it. I'm trying to find the movie that was on. I did just see a clip of it, and I'm trying to remember what movie that was from. All-Star Superman, that's the one.
That's the one, yep.
Yeah, because Superman's getting ready to die. That was the one I was trying, because that's what, or even there, he was trying to help himself. It wasn't until towards the end when he, I think that was the one time you saw Lex doing something. Lex was like, I've figured out how to fix everything. And it's because of that very one moment that you were just describing, where he's like, I can hear everything. Oh my God, I can see everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Superman ends up dying because of his overexposure to the sun rays, which was because Lex triggered a bomb that overactivated his Superman cells. So I remember that one now. But the other one there with Brainiac, it almost ends the same way, where he's like,
yeah, it's similar, but this one's a little bit more eloquent. You know,
yeah, this was, and yeah, and then I think Lex is like on his, like, you know, he's going to, you know, I think they finally put him to, they're going to kill him, you know, death penalty. And he's like, hey, here's my books of everything I've done. And I think ends up giving to like Adam Strange or something.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
Adam Strange.
Really underrated movie. Actually, yeah. I got to watch that movie now.
All-Star Superman. If anybody wants to check out a great book on Superman, All-Star Superman is it. The movie does a pretty decent job on the translation. Pretty much every DC animated does a great job on translating. There's a few things they leave out, but they're not needed. They're good, but they're not needed. You know, he gives Lois a pill to you know, be him for a day too, and they fly around for a day for her birthday, and he has to like defend her honor because of these two other, you know, jerk superheroes. They're like, hey, Lois, you want to go hang out with us? And you know, then I think the best one of that is the one with Parasite.
and oh God.
they're like mini stories. They're all tied together, all taking place during the same time, but they're just linking up. But yeah, no, definitely All-Star Superman is one to read. But again, that shows Lex finally not being that narcissist anymore. That's probably the only moment I can say that he stopped being that narcissist.
Yeah, that's really the only, that's why I brought it up. I was like, that's the only moment that you get a hint of vulnerability from Lex. That's it. Everything else is what you said, narcissistic. He wants to be the best. He wants people to glorify him, but he knows it'll never happen because, like you said before, there's always one guy above you. So, but yeah, so I like the Lex Luthor one. So this was good. This was good. I like this. breaking down the villains like that. And not mustache twirly villains like we've always had in the past. I don't think we'll ever do that. This is more of a complex show. Just kidding.
Yes, sir. So guys, make sure you check us out on heroesasylum.com because we will have our links for that page to Facebook and Twitter. Also, you'll have a link there for Midnight Movies where you can go and check out all of our Midnight Movies. We're doing an Avengers watch along for selected Avengers movies that Kane and I chose, as well as this month. It is my pick for our other movie watch along category where we picked up a bunch of different movie categories. You know, I picked up six, Kane picked up six. And so it is my decision and I am almost there with the decision.
Oh, I thought you were going to announce it.
No,
I'm teasing. Oh, man.
For this one,
you can't tease it. You can't tease
it. I just want people to know to tune in because I think within the next week, I think we're going to probably try to record it next weekend. And then of course, because the weekend after that is what?
KaiserCon, March 20th, 4 to 9 p.m. at the Kaiser University. And Saturday, the 21st, from 10 to 4, the captain and yours truly will be there. Come out, say hi, stop by the little table we're going to have, sit down, we're going to have some stuff, maybe some trivia, maybe some merch, who knows, but we're definitely going to be there walking around, talking to the good people of the KaiserCon. Lots of stuff happening. The 501st Legion is going to be there. I believe Bill Finger's granddaughter is going to be there. Doctor Who podcast.
Yep. Yeah, we're going to reach out to a lot of those people. We will be streaming live throughout the weekend, guys, so make sure you get out there and check us out. So if you guys want to hop on, join us for like a little bit, that's great. I do know they released their first kind of schedule because they're doing events there as well. I do know they're doing like some, if anybody's into like doing the little painting stuff, they're gonna, you know, do a couple of painting classes.
Maybe I'll have to drop by one of those.
They're doing a D&D starter kind of thing, so if anybody's interested in doing that, I was trying to get Willie to come out that night so he can join in. And they've got, I think, another trivia thing, and they've got events going on all weekend. They still haven't released the Saturday schedule, but there'll be food trucks out there, like, you know, most events nowadays. But yeah, guys, definitely get out there, check it out. You can find the links on our Facebook page. And if you don't want to buy tickets online, that's fine. You can pick them up at the door. But definitely find us. Once we actually find out where we're going to be, we'll definitely shoot out a message to everybody to find us on this hall or this room or wherever we're going to be. We're not too sure just yet.
Yeah, not quite. But yeah, bring us food too, because it's going to be a couple hours. You know, we'll be kind of hungry. Nice drink, you know, some Coke, I don't know.
Yeah, something maybe. But guys, we will see you guys next week. Again, hopefully we'll see you guys at KaiserCon. If not, Kane, take it away.
Well, you can reach us at Twitter at The Heroes Asylum. We'll be posting some stuff for the show, like I did this week where we did the subject of villains. So every time, pretty much every week, I'll be posting some stuff on Twitter about the show, about the subject, about the stuff we got going on, about our famous polls. We got a lot of polls. We didn't do no polls this week, but picks of the week and all that good stuff. We got our Facebook page, the main area of contact, and the Heroes Asylum group and podcast. Growing hits, almost at 500 followers. Come on, we gotta get to 500, and the goal is to be at 1,000 for the end of the year. But you know, we'll take the baby steps, one step at a time. Instagram, you know, here and there. But as always, from the captain to me and everybody else out there, get to the asylum.